Welcome to Torah Tzimecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and today we'll be studying Parshat Shlach. Last week in Parshat Bahalotcha, we read about the shift where our journey begins to go off course. In the first 10 prakim, Bnei Israel are on a three-day miraculous journey into Israel. But once we hit Parakut Aleph, chapter 11, we took a downward turn with three consecutive sins. First sin was the sin of the Mit'onanim, which most of the commentaries interpreted as a complaint, perhaps about the difficulties of the journey. The second sin was about the food, the man. Why do we only eat the man? We wish we had all the food that we had in Egypt that ended up being the place of Kibrot HaTa'aba. The people were buried in their desires. And lastly, the parsha ended with a more personal story that relates to both family and leadership, where Miriam and Aaron complain about Moshe, saying, "Harak ach b'Moshe diber Hashem, halo gam banu diber." Doesn't God speak to all of us? Why is Moshe special? Resulting in Miriam's tzara'at. All of these sins from last week's parsha relate to sins of speech, and this theme continues with the sin of the Meraglim in Parshat Shlach. Rashi pointed this out on one of his first commentaries on Parshat Shlach, on the word Shlach Lecha Anashim. Rashi asks about Smichut Parshiot, meaning why is this section, the story of the spies, juxtaposed with the section dealing with Miriam and her punishment? And Rashi says to show the grievousness of the spy sins, because she, Miriam, was punished on account of the slander that she said against her brother, and these sinners, meaning here the Meraglim, witnessed it and yet didn't take a lesson from her. And in fact, when we start reading Parshat Shlach, we're immediately confronted by speech. The very first word of this week's parsha is the word Vayidaber. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, Shlach lecha anashim v'yaturu et eretz kena'an asher ninotein l'bnei Yisrael. Hashem speaks to Moshe, saying, send these people who will spy or tour, really, through the land of Eretz Kena'an that I'm giving to Bnei Yisrael. The story continues then with Moshe's speech. He informs the spies what to look for in their journey throughout the land of Israel. And when the Meraglim come back, their speech is highlighted, beginning with the word Vayisapru. They recount, they tell the story of what they've seen in the land, but they culminate with a different word, Vayotziu Dibat Haaretz Asher Taruota El Bnei Israel. They say, Diba is translated as negative speech. It's interesting, it's the same word that we see with Miriam when she speaks, Miriam and Aaron, when they speak about Moshe. But Vayotziu Dibat Haaretz, they start speaking negative speech about the land, and they tell the people, Haaretz Asher Avarnu Bala Torata, Eretz Ochelet Yoshvahi, it's a land that eats its inhabitants. And it's this speech itself that leads to the loss of hope for the entire generation. And they pass this baton on to Bnei Israel, who also cry out that night, and it's immediately followed by a complaint, the word Vayalonu. Wouldn't it have been better had we died in Egypt or in the desert? Why, Moshe, why, Hashem, did you take us out here? There was no purpose. And this speech ultimately leads to Hashem's decree that no one from this generation, with the exception of Yoshua and Kalev, who they fought the speech of the Meraglim with hope, only they will enter into Israel, but no one else from this generation will merit entering into the land of Israel. Now, it's no coincidence that our Sefer, our book as a whole, is called Bamidbar. Now, Bamidbar means, literally, they were in the desert. But there's a midrash in Shmot Rabbah that says the words, Ein Midbar Ela Dibor. Anytime it uses the word Midbar, desert, it's really talking about Dibor, speech. So the Midrash in Shmot Rabbah is actually written not about our Sefer, about our book, and I thank Aviva Zorenberg for pointing out this Midrash, but this Midrash references Moshe's encounter with Hashem. It initially, when he first saw Hashem at the burning bush, which took place in the Midbar in the desert. This is where Chazal say in Shmot Rabbah that Midbar is interchangeable with Dibor. But here, the Midrash has a very different spin. It's in the merit of the Dibor, the words, the promise that Hashem had with Abraham back at his initial covenant with him, Brit Bein HaBetarim, where Hashem promised that he would take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, that Hashem now appears to Moshe with the actualization of that original nevuah. This is at the beginning of Sefer Shemot, before Moshe went back to the people and orchestrated their leaving Israel. So the Midrash there is talking about Midbar and Dibor in a very positive sense. Because of Hashem's Dibor, his speech to Abraham, now Moshe actualizes that in the Midbar, which begins in the desert. But here, it's the inverse of this. It's the Dibor of Bnei Israel. It's their negative speech that caused us to deviate from the original Dibor of Hashem, Hashem's positive speech, his promise of taking us out of Egypt and into Israel. Now, it's interesting because when we think about so many of these sins and these deviations being tied to speech, there's a part of me that always feels like, is this really such a big deal? There are very grave punishments here for speech that didn't actually lead to anything. The people didn't do anything. And I think, yes, it's the same question that could have been asked about all those previous sins that we listed in Parsha Bahalotcha. But maybe this is precisely the point. Speech actually matters. And in some ways, we tend to dismiss speech, but speech makes an impact. And speech is something that we all struggle with. So how did we get there? How did the people at the time get to this place of falling into this cycle of negative speech that ultimately prevented this generation of getting into Israel? Now, this parsha has a second related message that I think can help us understand this. And it's encapsulated in another recurring word. But this time, the word is ra'ah, to see. So I want to start by tracing this word through the parsha and then see what the message is that we can take out of that, about the importance of that word. Okay, so the parsha also begins with the word ra'ah. When Moshe sends the people to see the land, he says, "Ura'item et ha'aretz mahi." The spies should go into Israel, and their mandate is to see, what is this land like? And the meraglim, the spies, do exactly that. They go into the land, they bring back, they see it, they bring back the fruit, they show the people the fruit of the land. But then when they begin speaking about what they saw, their speech takes a very negative turn. And they say, I'm going to quote, this is where the word ra'ah is used. They say, "Vigam yelidei ha'anak ra'inu sham," we saw the giants there. And then they continue, "V'chol ha'am asher ra'inu b'tocha anshei midot." Again, all the nation that we saw there were huge, meaning the conquest is just insurmountable. It's impossible. "V'sham ra'inu et ha'nefilim b'nei ha'anak min ha'nefilim." And we saw these specific giants there. And they continue not just with what they saw, but with how they felt. "V'nehi b'einenu kechagavim." We were in their eyes like grasshoppers, v'chein hayinu be'eneihem. We were in our own eyes like grasshoppers, v'chein hayinu be'eneihem. And that's how we also were in their eyes. So they describe what they saw. They selectively choose the parts to recount. And then they talk about their feelings and their perspectives and what came out of that, how that shaped the way they felt about their journey. Now, the next ra'ah that is mentioned, the seeing here, is actually the kavod of Hashem, Hashem's sanctity, which is near ba'ohel moed. Hashem's shechina comes to the ohel moed, to the Mishkan. Moshe also refers to Hashem's sanctity when he argues with Hashem not to wipe out this generation because it would be a disgrace for Hashem's sanctity and for a generation that saw Hashem's miracles so up close. And Hashem ultimately responds also using this word ra'ah. And Hashem says, this is in Perek Yudalid, "Ki kol ha'anashim haro'im et kvodi ve'et ototai asher asiti b'mitzrayim u'bamidbar v'inasu oti eser pamim v'lo shamu b'koli." So this whole generation, what was distinct about this generation? They saw my miracles straight up. They saw all my signs. And they still tested me 10 times and didn't listen to me. this nation, this generation, im yiru'u ta'aretz asher nishbati la'avotam, they will never see the land that I promised to their forefathers. So you see, before we got to speech, there was something else that went wrong here. And this was about seeing. It was about perspective. It was what the people, these same people who had seen Hashem's protection and Hashem's miracles throughout their lifetimes, it was what they chose to see when they went into the land. And Rav Soloveitchik comments about this in one of his famous essays, The Singularity of the Land of Israel. And he says, I'm going to read you a short quote from it. He says, Moshe expected the scouts to note the segula, the singularity of the land, to perceive its worthiness in terms of Abraham's covenant with God. But they viewed the land as one would appraise property. The report was that of spies, not of scouts. They balanced debits against credits, and they declared the entire enterprise hopeless. With grandeur looking down on them, all they could see was the mundane. Like Miriam, who Rav Soloveitchik connects it to in terms of her assessment of Moshe, the spies had everything laying right in front of them, but it was the perspective with which they chose to see it. So before we get to the D board, there was a lack of perspective and a missing appreciation for this gift that was in front of them. Now, after the decree that this generation won't enter into Israel, the Parsha closes with a list of mitzvot. And most of these are mitzvot that will be kept in Eretz Yisrael, giving hope that although this generation won't go in, there is still a future. So the Parsha, even with this terrible story in it, doesn't end in a negative way, which I think is a beautiful message in and of itself. But I want to talk briefly, close with this, that the last mitzvah is not related to Israel. It's the mitzvah of tzitzit. And at first it seems out of place, but once we read it, the words are very tightly linked to the sin of the spies. And the pasuk about tzitzit says, "Vayalachem l'tzitzit ureitem oto uzchartem et kol mitzvot Hashem va'asitem otam." So when you have these tzitzit, note this word ra'ah, you will see it, and it will cause you to remember all the mitzvot of Hashem, and you'll follow them. Velo taturu acharei levavchem v'acharei eneichem, and you won't stray from the path after your heart and your eyes that you were straying after them. And it right away, this pasuk immediately brings us back to the sin of the Meraglim, because almost all the verbs that are used here are the same verbs of the Meraglim story. The tzitzit are in order to see, ra'ah, to remember, which goes back to some of the earlier sins. And that way you won't latur, you won't deviate from, go astray like the Meraglim did when they went latur et ha'aretz. And you won't follow only your hearts and your eyes in an unfiltered way. Now, Rashi picks up on this this connection right away. And Rashi says on the words, lo tatur achrei levavchem, you won't stray after your heart. He says right away, this is just like mitor haaretz. That's what the spies did. They strayed. They scouted out the land. Halev ha'enayim, he miraglim laguf. So now this is almost taking what the spies did, but putting it into a metaphor. It's not that there's physical spies who are going out to scout, but in a way, the eyes and the heart, those are like the spies of the body. That's how we make all of our judgments. We use our eyes and we use our hearts. And those are the same thing that Rashi continues. Those two senses can often lead us astray. Ha'ayin ro'eh, ha'lev chomed. The eye sees, the heart desires, v'haguf oseh t'avira. And then ultimately the body, following these almost like metaphoric spies, the eyes and the heart, will go off to do the avira. And I think this connection here points out that what's been missing all along in all the deviations is a lack of proper seeing and a lack of proper memory, a lack of appreciation and a lack of perspective. The mitzvah of tzitzit, and specifically here, it's the tzachelet, the blue string on the tzitzit, which has us reflect back on the sea, the sky, on Hashem. It's a perspective about Hashem's hand in our life that's supposed to inform everything that we see and everything that we desire. So this memory and the seeing has been gone astray, and tzitzit are almost a corrective. Now, we live now in a world where I think, in a way, we're constantly bombarded with images, sound bites, information. So how do we train our eyes and hearts to be honest, but also to see things with a perspective that allows us not to miss out on the gifts and opportunities in front of us? So my colleague Shuli Taub has pointed out something interesting to me, that as teachers, we focus often on the value of critical thinking. We always want our students to evaluate an issue and form a judgment. But sometimes we and they confuse thinking critically with just being critical. And maybe the message of this parsha is to be discerning, right? To be aware, to be informed, but without that critical lens that's always looking to make negative judgments. Instead, the parsha encourages us to look through a lens that's informed with hope, faith, and curiosity. Thank you for learning Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. I look forward to learning with you next week.